The Guardian.
This podcast is part of The Guardian Small Business Network's Adventures in Business series, supported by Hiscox Insurance. Find out more about getting the right cover for your business at hiscox.co.uk/businessinsurance. Meet John. John Stapleton is an entrepreneur, business thought leader, CEO, and board director. He has set up three successful consumer-branded businesses, and you've probably heard of at least one of them.
First one is New Covent Garden Soup Company, which we set up back in 1987. Second is a company based in the States doing something very similar, fresh soup in a carton for the US market, called Glencoe Foods, and we set that up in 1998. And my third food-branded business is Little Dish, which we set up in 2006. And I'm still involved in that business. We still own it, and it's going very successfully.
But let's start at the beginning. In 1987, New Covent Garden Soup.
I met somebody called Andrew Palmer. And Andrew had this crazy idea. He wanted to bring fresh soup to the market. In those days, liquid soup was basically always found in a can. You'd walk down the soup aisle, frankly, to buy liquid soup. And Andrew's vision was to put it in the fresh aisle and make sure that the product, funnily enough, would taste of the ingredients you used to start with. The problem with canned soup is it tastes a lot of the process. It tastes quite sweet because a lot of sugar is added a lot of the time. And it's cooked to high temperatures, so it loses a lot of flavor, it loses a lot of nutrition and vitamins and wholesomeness. And our vision, pretty much from the early days, was to manufacture a fresh soup that tastes as it would if you made it at home. And in the end, we decided, you know what, let's go and do it. So that was the first venture, and I suppose most people will recognize that brand more than the other two that I've been involved with. And for me, it was a huge adventure. I guess for all of it, it was all of us. It was a huge adventure. It was a creative, crazy, chaotic environment, just basically, you know, setting up an entrepreneurial business. And I was completely unprepared for that. But it was a great white knuckle ride and a great adventure. And we all enjoyed it and learned a huge amount from that experience.
Within the first 2 years, they had a factory, big customers, and an even bigger factory being built. But it wasn't all plain sailing. As with most things, there were problems.
We had a fire which just basically knocked out an entire section of the factory overnight, literally, and meant we couldn't make any more soup, and we were out for about 10 weeks. So what do you do in a situation like that? We've got a very short shelf life product. There is no stock sitting there to fill the gap. We're basically making and supplying and making and supplying constantly, delivering to the retailers 7 days a week. As it turned out, we were just about to build our second factory. We were just about to turn our second factory on. It wasn't ready yet. It was nowhere near ready yet, but at least it was there. So we knuckled down and we brought a lot of people from our factory in London and bussed them up to Reading and brought a lot of new people in and trained them on a factory that wasn't ready by people who didn't know the new factory. And there are sort of things that, you know, stand to you because, okay, we couldn't supply the retailers for not the whole 10 weeks, but for 2 weeks. And there was, you know, there's nothing you can do. When a factory burns down, normally you're out of action until you find a new factory. At least we had a second one to fall back on. I went to Ealing Waitrose and I was walking past where the soup should be. And there was a little notice up there saying, due to, you know, discontinuity of supply, we can't bring you any fresh soup. And there were two little old ladies walking past, and they were like, oh, I heard they had some accident, or I heard there was some problem. It's terrible. I love that soup. When it comes back online, I'm going to buy twice as much just to help them out. And I'm thinking, oh, that's so nice, but please don't, because we just want to be able to supply what we can to everybody. And it's so nice when you meet customers. That's one of the things that's really heartwarming about a product that, you know, consumers consume, ordinary people in the street consume, is that they can relate to what you do. They can relate to the product. And we had such a lot of goodwill in Waitrose, which was our very first retailer at the time. People loved the soup.
Although the company had successfully navigated itself out of a difficult situation, the worst was yet to come.
Yeah, unfortunately, the person did something almost inexplicable and put himself in a position next to a machine, and he was killed. And it was like such a shock. And we're thinking, how on earth could that have happened? And then you constantly, the HSE, Health and Safety, the executive came in and did a full audit and found there was no risk, really, in terms of the operation. He was trained properly, and he saw that the company had done everything right. Yeah, but at the same time, you still sit there and think, well, there's got to be something that we could have done to have prevented that. And you really think, you know, it's not about making soup anymore. It's about somebody who, I think he was somebody who had come from Africa and was, you know, one of his first jobs in the UK, and then he suddenly didn't exist anymore. It was a big shock. And everybody felt it, and everybody felt kind of like suddenly frozen for probably a few days. And we shut the factory down, and we dealt with all of the procedures. But it certainly just makes you feel that, you know, you're in a, you know, you constantly think that this is the most important thing in the world is what you're doing, and you've got a long list of action items which are you know, life and death, frankly, you know. No, and then suddenly you're confronted by something that really is life and death, and it puts everything into perspective.
10 years later, John was ready for his next adventure. He and Andrew sold the business, and John packed his bags. Like many before him, he moved to the States, to California. It was there he set up Glencoe.
So if you say New Covent Garden Soup Company was a success, and it clearly was, then in the same breath you have to say that Glencoe Foods was a failure. There's no two ways about it. I went out there and brought some of the shareholders with me from New Covent Garden days, but frankly, it was a completely new business. We set up a separate organization with a lot of US shareholders as well. We raised money, and we built a factory, and we employed people, and we set up the operation, and we started off, and it worked quite well for a number of years. And that's always the thing about a venture. If a venture starts off and it stumbles at the first step, okay, you can change it. But if it looks like it's going to be a failure because it's just not working, you got something basically completely wrong in your assumptions, whatever it might be, then you can shut down and move on. The difficult bit is if you're getting success to a certain extent, or some of the things you're doing are right. And many of the things we did at Glencoe were right. The thing about, you know, Glencoe, really, as an entrepreneur, it's all about taking risks in any event. And I think you have to be prepared for some of the risks not to work. So New Covent Garden worked really well. We were all very happy. We learned a huge amount, and Glencoe didn't. For me personally, I was smart enough to realize it wasn't going to be completely the same, but I kind of thought we had learned so much at New Covent Garden in the UK that we'd just apply all of that, at least the bits that were relevant. And there were a lot of things that were different. And it was really when we then began to kind of realize that all the bits that we were doing right aren't enough. There are some bits that are not working. And we tried so hard, and in the end we realized we had to invest more money, and we weren't getting the shareholder support to do that. A lot of things were going on at the time, like always is the case. But it was quite gut-wrenching, really, to have to make that decision, because, you know, I went out on a limb to, you know, generate a vision and get people to buy into it, frankly, as Alistair did too, my co-founder. So both of us were on the line. But that's what it's about being an entrepreneur. You can't have it both ways. You know, you're in it for the good times and the bad, and you try to make, you know, trying to compensate, and you try to deal with the adverse situations. But at some point, if it's just not going to work, you have to decide, okay, I'm going to have to pull out of this. But letting shareholders down and letting staff go and dealing with creditors, all of that was a very difficult experience. I wouldn't want to couch it in any other way. It was very definitely a difficult experience. But again, it's all about, you know, thinking, you know, I did my best, did I? Yeah, I think I did. There's a few things I would have done differently, but you've just got to move on. And I think for me, when I went out to California, I thought I knew more than I did, or I assumed that whatever I knew was going to be just as relevant to running a business there. And I think you kind of, there's a certain element of cockiness attached to that, perhaps. You know, is it confidence or is it arrogance? It's always a fine line. When you have a failure, you become you become introspective for a while. You think about what you've done to contribute to that failure. And I think it does a lot for you in the context of you become a little bit more humble. And that's always a good thing.
So John and his wife moved back to Europe. He ended up in Germany.
I met somebody called Hillary, and we basically set up Little Dish together. And Hillary and I basically had the same vision and the same understanding and the same idea that there was a marketplace out there for children's, not babies, but toddlers, in effect, quality, tasty, convenient food products. And we both recognized that there was a need, definitely, for quality products, for unadulterated products, for products that were not going to be laced with sugar or laced with salt. So healthy products, obviously, but also convenient products. products because moms didn't have time. Not every mom has the time to cook from scratch. And also it had to taste good.
So that was it. Little Dish was born. It was going well, but John noticed something that made him uneasy.
I think in any business sector, it's really important to have a vision and to have values and to live by those values. But there are certain elements of the food industry, it's probably absolutely critical to do that. And I think the food industry has come under a lot of scrutiny, quite rightly, in the last 5 years or 10 years, with various scandals and various exposés and various things that maybe the consumer didn't understand or didn't believe or didn't realize that the food industry has been doing for quite some time. Some would say that's okay and it's normal, but actually my view is that if you're going to make a claim, you need to stand by it. And we outsource manufacturing a Little Dish, for example, so we don't have a factory to make our healthy, convenient, tasty meals, but we get somebody to make it for us. And in the early days, in the very beginning, it was kind of difficult to get somebody to make it for us. So we searched and searched and searched and found a very good outfit that we were doing a lot of work with. And we were scaling up the process and we were, you know, doing our what we call development work and taking it through the factory and getting it ready to launch. And we were probably 6 weeks out launching this product in Waitrose again, conveniently. And I was working very late there one night. All management had gone home and we're just questioning getting everything wrapped up and the final bits of it. And this particular company made a range of products, but they also made some organic products for some other brands. Now, Little Dish is not organic. It's very natural and healthy and clean and pure, but it's not organic. So I was working on the basis of getting this product finalized. And this guy walked in that night with two Asda bags full of whatever it was. And I said, "What's that? What have you got there?" I said, "We ran out of sweet potato and we ran out of something else. I had to just go around to Asda to get some more." I said, "Oh, okay. I didn't realize Asda had that such a high range of a broad range of organic products." "Oh, it's not organic. It's organic. Don't worry. I just had to get some because we ran out." And I'm thinking, wow, I mean, what does that say about that business, really? And so, you know, they're putting non-organic ingredients, maybe not a lot, but they're quite prepared to do it. What happens if I'm not there in 6 months' time and they're making Little Dish products, which you could maybe argue is even more important because it's for kids? Can I let that happen? Can I trust these guys? I'm not going to be there at 11 o'clock every night keeping an eye on this. That's not my job, that's their job. And really, we decided, you know, I spoke to Hillary about this too, and we made exactly the right decision. 6 weeks away from launch, we pulled out, we stopped. We said, we can't take this risk. It's our brand. It's all we've got is our brand. And, you know, we didn't have a lot of time to get another one, another manufacturing partner. We did find one, incredibly, within that 6 week period and launched. Never told Waitrose in the meantime we had a problem. They didn't need to know if we were confident to actually find a new one. But I think that's one of the lessons that kind of re-emphasized with me is that if you have values and you have make claims and you're trying to engender the trust of a particular group of consumers, whoever they may be, doesn't really matter, then you need to be absolutely sure you can deliver on that every single time. And if you can't, you've got a big, big problem.
Since then, Little Dish has continued to go from strength to strength. But John wanted a more balanced life and brought in a new management team to enable him to take a step back. He sits on the board every 4 weeks, but he also sits on boards of other businesses, offering his expertise and advice.
Really, it's all about building brands to a national level, and that means selling your products to the major retailers and marketing your products to the consumer. That's what we did at New Covent Garden. That's what we did at Little Dish. That's what we did in the States too. So from that point of view, it's very straightforward and quite simple. There's a lot more to it than that in reality, of course, and every business is different. And that's one of the things I really enjoy about it now, because I get to be involved in lots of different businesses. The variety is much more obvious and apparent than it was before. I think really, frankly, all those experiences and many, many more besides, it's about, I call it dealing with adversity. And it's not about adversity, it's about dealing. And it's really about these adverse situations which come your way, which really have no fault of yours. It's all about how you deal with them. And that's the issue, because that's all you've got control over. And that's what makes the difference in terms of an entrepreneur. What do you learn from any situation which is not your making and is not very positive? It's a question of dealing with it. I think, you know, some people ask me, what does it mean to be an entrepreneur? And there's so many different answers to this. You know, it's usual. If you have 100 entrepreneurs in a room, they'll give you 200 answers to that particular question. To me, an entrepreneur, well, put it this way. To me, An entrepreneur is somebody who has an idea and then implements that idea. Simple as that. And a non-entrepreneur is somebody who has an idea, and that's the difference. We don't always act on our ideas. We always have wonderful ideas. There's so many ideas we have every day, but we don't, you know, we're lazy, or we're doing something else, or we don't have the courage, or there's too much of a risk, or there's so many reasons why we don't do it. But as an entrepreneur, you do it. And it's all about the implementation. That's what makes the difference. So if you're in an adverse situation, it's the dealing with the adversity that makes the difference. It's not the adversity itself.
This episode of the Small Business Podcast was produced at The Guardian by Rowan Slaney and presented by me, Coco Khan, a specialist journalist. To hear more great stories, subscribe and review on any of your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Facebook and Twitter. Just search Guardian Podcasts.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.